You are listening to the SSP Podcast. This episode is sponsored by Smart Albums. Smart Albums is the fastest, easiest, and most intuitive album design software available. They've made it so easy so you can get back to doing the things you love. Hey guys, in today's episode, we're going to be talking to Daryl Kalfi. Daryl Kalfi is the brains behind the SSP brand. I came to him a while ago, asked him to create a logo. Instead, he said, you know what? We're going to create an entire aesthetic, a feel. We're going to create an entire experience for the client to engage in. He's also one of my really good friends. We work together. We shoot weddings together. I'm really excited to share this interview with you, so take a listen. I turn my camera on. I cut my fingers on the way of slipping away. I turned my feelings on. You made me untouchable for life. Yeah, and you wasn't the man. Okay, all right. All right. You're listening to the very first SSP podcast, episode one. We interviewed Daryl Kalfi. I'm sitting here with my friend Jeremy. He's also a photographer. Jeremy, what did you think of that interview?
Actually, it had a profound impact on me. my wife and I are going to go on a date this week. I'm going to play her the interview as we drive up to Roanoke so that we can take the first part of the evening. We're going to like hang out and watch a movie and stuff, but
yeah,
we were going to sit and have coffee because, as you know, I'm right in the middle of a transition.
Right. Or going which back we interviewed you on, which is another episode.
Right.
So you're going to go on a date and you're going to play the podcast, yeah, the interview with, you don't, yeah, think that'll bore her to death?
No, actually, I think that she will be very interested to be included in that. And she is one of the people that will help me to implement some of the things that Daryl talks about in this interview.
Yeah. Well, he's brilliant. I mean, he's smart when it comes to like marketing and branding. And I mean, I don't know everything that he talks about or in the interview, but I know a lot of it. And we've worked together for a long time, Daryl and I, and I always leave conversations with him like, oh yeah, I forgot that. Or, oh, there's something new there.
Right. I felt like there is a genuine wealth of knowledge that the two of you together in that interview are able to bring out that can be very, very useful for people, so much so that I've planned my week around it.
Well, I don't want to speak too much for Daryl, but I'm incredibly intelligent.
I said it was both of you. That wasn't enough.
Well, I just wanted to make sure the listener understood. So you're planning your whole date around your wife listening to this interview.
Yeah, we'll play that at the beginning and go sit and have coffee. And I'm telling you, man, I was really inspired by some of the things that you guys said. And I think I realized that, and this is going to sound terrible, but I've been in business in the photography business for like 11 or 12 years. And I'm a guy that likes to study. I love learning, but I've never been interested in doing that when it comes to business. Now I'll do that with my photography.
Right. You mean like learning, expanding, doing different things.
Right.
Yeah.
Just the mechanics of business has never been something that I've really tried to consume. And when I listen to Daryl, I feel like he's consumed it. And that's good for me. And that's good for listeners because there's a lot to be learned there.
Yeah. And it, for me, it resonates. I love it. I love you referenced the mechanics of business.
Right.
I love it. I'm obsessed with it. It's the same reason I loved and obsessed over sports as a kid, like the technique of things. You know what, right, I'm saying?
Yeah. I don't know that I could ever love it that much, but but I definitely do see that I need to appreciate it more.
Right.
And I feel like that helped me to do that.
Well, and I think too, it's a big struggle for photographers in general for a few reasons. I think you're artists. So sometimes artists, it's tough for them to tap into that. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a type A thing, but business and art, they don't generally go hand in hand. You know what I'm saying? So to hear someone like Daryl really, really talk about it and know it, the ins and outs of it, I think is really interesting.
I would even, excuse me, say that sometimes it's not just that they don't go hand in hand. There may even be a perception that they can't work together.
Yeah.
That there cannot be a synergistic relationship between your art or your creativity and then the way that you approach the business part of that, because they're different parts, but they need to work together.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I mean, I think there's sort of a romantic idea about the artist. Books, movies have contributed to that, and there might be some truth to some of it. I think a lot of artists who are really, truly, truly artists and deeply creative people think that they just can't be bothered with the business part of it, because maybe for them it feels like in some way they're compromising what they really want to do. You take books like The Fountainhead.
Yeah.
Just there's books that are out there like that, movies that are out there. We don't have to get into all that, but I think it's just sort of a romantic idea of what an artist really is, and that would never bother themselves with, like I said, the mechanics of business.
Yeah. And I think too, part of it is, I have a friend, I always think about when you talk about the artist versus the business, you know, the businessman versus the artist, whatever. It sort of makes me laugh when I think about him, because he's incredibly talented. He's a successful photographer, but he could be more successful. But I think there's an element of not confrontation so much, but I think that there is a part of that that sort of goes into running a business that, and I don't mean being confrontational. I don't mean you need to go pick fights with people to be a good businessman. But if you take, you know, like Pablo Picasso versus Gordon Gekko, you know what I'm saying? Like, there seems to be two separate personas when you talk about one or the other, and it's difficult to find people like Daryl who have it all together. He's a great artist, but he also really understands business.
Yeah, like on a massive level.
Yeah, apparently. Listen, hey, this is my podcast.
I know.
I don't want to.
You're the genius that drew the information out of them. You know,
right,
a good interview is like making a good portrait.
Okay, I hear what you're doing. I see what you're doing.
Richard Avedon said that. Okay, I know a few things too.
All right. Well, this is a great interview, and I want to get right to it. Turn to face you, no room in frame for two. You cannot outrun. All right, I am with Daryl Kalfi. Daryl Kalfi is a close friend of mine. We have known each other for what, seven years?
Yeah.
Daryl came into my life about 6-7 years ago. I approached you about...
You needed a logo.
A logo. I was starting a business and I needed a logo. And first of all, you gave me a fantastic deal on a logo, logo design.
Well, it was easy because the other versions that you had looked like a sixth grader had done
them. They were garbage, yeah. And the other thing that I remember, I distinctly remember, and I tell people all the time in workshops, is the time you came to me and you sat down, you slammed down the book on social media. Here's a plan for you to execute. And what's interesting about that is
it legitimately was the foundation from taking us from things like Facebook, zero or 100 followers to 30,000 followers today. Twitter, same thing. Instagram, I'm a little lazy on, but anyway, thanks for doing this, man.
Oh man, it's a pleasure. I think the last 7 years, working with you and just being friends with you and just kind of watching the Sam Stroud brand, or as we call it internally, the SSP brand grow.
The empire.
The empire. I've just been so excited and proud, you know, and that has been not only being a part of it, but also just being an association, you know, and whenever I hear it talked about, you know, whether it's socially or literally socially in public, it just makes you proud and excited to see, like, wow, the work that's being done is great, and to watch the way that people respond to it. So,
yeah, you helped me grow, legitimately grow a brand. And we shoot together. We haven't shot together in a while. We used to shoot together all the time.
Yeah.
But now you've got a family,
yeah,
other responsibilities. You work now. We're here at Moore & Giles. You work for Moore & Giles, which...
And we can talk about that in a minute, too. Yeah. That was fun. No, and I think that's a great point. You know, when we started this 7 years ago together, this has been a good example of how life has transitions and stages, and how we've walked alongside each other throughout all of them. And what's cool is to go from, you know, you shooting 2, 3, 4 weddings a year when we first met and saying, this is what I want to do professionally for the rest of my life because it's a passion for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, to today, where last year you shot almost 100 weddings.
More than 100 weddings,
yeah. Right. I think the beautiful thing about that is to watch that growth happen. It's been organic, it's been natural, and that's all been in a very short window if you really think about it.
Yeah.
So it's just been cool to be a part of that.
It's a scary growth to some degree. I mean, when you think about where we started to where we're at today.
Yeah.
Oh, but anyway, that's a good segue because part of what I wanted to talk about today with you specifically, as photographers approach me, they ask a lot about their brand. I can offer up some to them, but I feel like in a situation or an environment like this where we can have some dedicated time to talking about branding, the importance of branding.
Yeah.
I try to give them, hey, focus on a couple of these minor things, but like, let's talk about the SSP brand for a second. Yeah. In relation to that, what was it in your mind that you saw? These are the important factors. I mean, you joked about like what I brought you.
Yeah.
And obviously they didn't fit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what is it that you see? Like, these are important when it comes to creating a brand.
Well, I had the opportunity to work in New York for 2 years right out of college, and I got to work with some of the best footwear brands in the country. And what you saw out of them was, of course, they had great logos. You know, Adidas, Nike, K-Swiss, those are classic logos that haven't changed.
Was this the, side note, the job where you were doing the on-the-street videos?
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, those are great.
So when working with those brands, you started to realize that branding was more than just a logo. What it was it was the total essence of the brand. It was every time you came in contact with Nike, Adidas, K-Swiss, like, what was it that the brand was trying to share about themselves? A lot of those are called lifestyle brands, where the people that are attaching themselves to the brand get some sort of affirmation by wearing or being a part of that brand. It almost kind of defines who they are to some degree.
Absolutely.
So I think when you think about any brand, I think often we go to, well, what does the logo look like? And that's a great start. But I think it's really more, what does that logo represent? You know, if you look at SSP, if you look at Sam Stroud Photography, you know, we started with a very simple circle and a very simple S. To kind of represent, you know, the aperture, and then, but it wasn't overpronounced. Like, we didn't have to go too deep into it. We didn't have to make the logo a camera. We were just simply trying to create some form of icon that each time you saw it, you had a remembrance of, oh, I've seen that before.
Yeah.
You know, I think the bigger thing when it comes to the brand is what has the experience been, beyond the logo. So when people come in contact with Sam Stroud in person, when people come in contact with Sam Stroud online, when people come in contact with Sam Stroud Photo, you know, in a social media setting, like, what is their experience? Yeah. And I think you do a great job of that. I think you're active, you're targeted, you know, you're very analytical. But then I also think on the customer service side of things, like,
what does that brand represent? Sure. You know, and so I think it's important to remember as a photographer or any brand in general that a logo is not your brand. A logo is literally just your logo.
Right.
You know, but the brand is really what does the business as a whole represent? And how, the truth is that no matter what you want it to represent, it's how do people perceive it?
Yeah. So. And I think, and maybe this is a backwards way of thinking about it, but when you first created that logo, and we've since changed the logo, but not far, like that was one of the things I made really clear to the designer of the new logo. I said, look, I want a very minor change. We've all seen those BuzzFeed articles like, hey, this is what Dairy Queen logo used to look like. This is what it looks like now. And sometimes they're hideous. And I didn't want to get caught up in that. I wanted our logo to be representative of a few things. But ultimately, like you're saying, when I show up to a wedding, the logo is merely an extension of how I'm perceived of that day anyway.
Yep. Yeah, I think a great example of that is the night that you and I stayed at the JW Marriott in D.C.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Oh, absolutely.
And the first thing that
hotel
we were
ever stayed
yeah,
in.
Yeah, right. It's a great, amazing hotel. So a plug for the JW Marriott in Washington, D.C. But we got the key cards to our room, if you remember.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
And the key cards were these solid black key cards with a very slight debossing of the JW logo on it. And it felt like luxury. Yeah. It felt like something of value, even before I entered the room.
Yep.
Was the room nice? Yeah. But was it that much nicer? No.
No.
But okay. That card, the moment I got it, didn't have an advertisement for the restaurant on it.
Right.
It wasn't dirty. It felt fresh. It felt expensive. It felt like luxury.
Right. And do you remember the first thing I did when I got that key?
Yeah, you kept it.
And then I called the manager and I said, I need to know where you got these key cards from.
Yeah. And that was our first round of business cards.
That was my business card. Yeah.
For a long time. And I think that's probably a great example of how branding begins at that first interaction with a customer.
Yeah. And it's... To another extent, or that to extend that point a little bit further, my wife always makes fun of me because of I'll fall in love with a product because of the packaging. Yeah. I love Apple products, but I love their packaging even more.
Yeah.
We were just talking about the Apple Watch. Yeah. I was fawning over the packaging. Yeah. The watch is cool. The packaging was better.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
The aesthetic, the color, the feel, everything mm-hmm. about it. And that's so, it's a continuation of everything they do when you call their customer service. When you go to the Apple store, when you talk to a customer rep at the Apple store, when you talk to an Apple rep at Best Buy,
yeah.
It's just a one continual thing, which I feel like is, I guess, what you're talking about.
Yeah, and the greatest brands in the world do it that way, right? Right. I'd say that so many things are equal when you look at them as a whole, whether the brands or products, but it's in that last 10% of finishing, right? It's in that last 10% of polish that you really start to see things become separated. You know, it's in the packaging, like you just said, it's in the customer experience. It's in how do they train their sales reps? You know, I'll give you a good example. When the guy that is delivering soda, right, opens a convenience store door and he's pulling in crates of the soda to put it in the refrigerator. Like oftentimes those kind of moments in our lives are some of our most impactful with a brand, right? So if that Pepsi guy was rude to you, right, you might drink Coke. Or if the Coke guy was rude to you, you might drink Pepsi.
Right.
But if the guy...
Pepsi's disgusting.
I would agree. But if the guy bringing in the brand, mm-hmm. right, he is the representative of the brand, right? And whatever interaction it is you have with that guy in shorts and a polo with the soda on the chest, that is oftentimes how you will perceive the brand.
Yeah.
And so I think as photographers, since we're talking to photographers, as you think about representations of your brand, right? Let's think about more than just the logo. Of course, let's think about the website. Of course, let's think about social media and the voice that you're using. Of course, let's think about the way that you dress when you do shoot a wedding, right?
You know,
is it consistent? Is it well put together? Think about your secondary shooter. Like, what are they dressing like? Yeah. You know, how are they being perceived? What's their behavior like? You know, all of those things, again, are representations of your brand.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things that I love is that you do carry a Moore & Giles bag.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and I think
two or three of them.
Yeah. And one of the reasons that I outfitted you with that is because I know that as you shoot the level of weddings that you shoot, you bump into people that will respond to that, right? And so that's why our whole Sam Stroud photo team carries these bags, is because I know that the level of weddings that we're shooting, we're going to bump into people that go, oh, that's a nice bag. Where did that come from?
Right.
And I am so proud of our team as photographers that I know that any interaction those people have with the Moore & Giles brand at that point,
top notch,
is going to be positive. And there's been how many times now where those conversations have transitioned into moving from a Sunday or a Saturday wedding into a Monday morning email from the bride or the groom saying, like, how can I learn more about Moore & Giles?
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah. And I think that's cool.
That is cool. I want to talk about, go back for a second. You were talking about the polished 10%.
Yeah.
You've read the book Rework?
Yeah.
Okay. Phenomenal book. Yeah. One of the things I love about that book as a whole is its approach is not that there is a definitive, like, this is the definitive answer to getting it working. They give two examples of polishing a brand. They talk about Intel as one example that they just sort of shut the doors and then reopened and were billionaires. The other approach is just keep going, keep doing it till you get it right. Where do you fall?
Well, I think anytime you try to redo a brand, like shut the doors like that and reopen, the challenge is that you're still going to have the baggage of the same name.
Yeah.
Right. So what I've learned from a dear friend of mine who's in the restaurant industry is if you're going to rebrand a restaurant, you shut it down and you change everything. You change the way it looks, you change the seating, and of course you change the name.
Right.
Right? Because very few people actually know who owns a restaurant, right? But what they do know is the name, and they do know, oh, hey, those are the same booths that were here previously. Those are the same tables, right? That's the same stuff that was kind of on the menu before. So I'm a big believer, if you're going to change it, shut it down and change everything.
Okay.
Now, you do see brand tweaks along the way, and that's a different story, right? So you could look at the latest rendition of the Pepsi logo, and what's funny is that you still see some of the old logos on trucks because brand redos are expensive.
Yeah.
I think in the case of, you know, a photographer, I think an important thing to do would be kind of like what you've done is kind of pick a general look and feel. And when you do a brand shift, don't go extreme one way or the other. You know, unless you've, you know, pissed off thousands of people along the way and brides absolutely hate you, right?
We've got a few of those in town.
Yeah. Or commercial clients absolutely hate you. Like, there's no sense in doing that.
Right.
You know, and at that point, you should just join the witness protection program
and
start over.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm a big fan of if you're going to do small tweaks, you do small tweaks, small iterations, and then make sure that it stays consistent and change your business cards, your websites, your social media platforms so that they all have the same new logo.
Right.
But the truth is that if you're going to do a complete rebrand, shut it down, change everything, and of course, change the name.
So in contrast, marketing, I think a lot of people, they hear the word branding and they hear the word marketing and they think they're the same.
Yeah.
They're not the same.
No, they're very different. And I think, you know, they share, you know, they're cousins to a degree, almost like marketing and PR are cousins, you know, and sometimes they get put under the same umbrella. But I think what you find in marketing, especially today, is that it's very different than it's ever been before in kind of the recent history of marketing, right? So let's think back to like the 1920s, all the way up through Mad Men, up until honestly the late 90s.
Do you watch Mad Men?
I love Mad Men.
It's a great show.
I have not seen the last, what, six or seven episodes of the last season.
It's good.
Season. I can't wait.
Yeah.
We crushed them like we did a binge for like the last four seasons. And to be honest with you, I hated Mad Men in the beginning because there were no redeeming characters.
No.
You know?
There's not.
But it was a great history lesson.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to that degree, I respected it. But if you look at it, they are in the details, man.
Yeah.
They love everything about the details of that show. Anyway, back to marketing. So previously, if you can just put your Mad Men hat on for a second, right? They were all doing what was called outbound marketing, where you're really trying to interrupt a person in their daily life.
Right.
A billboard, an advertisement, radio, TV. You remember Harry Crane in that and how Harry Crane should have been a minor character, but he became a big character because of the role that TV started playing.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
As a media buyer. So long story short, like that has been the history of marketing. And then all of a sudden, we had this wonderful invention called the internet, thanks to Al Gore.
Al Gore, yes.
And it has changed everything. You know, if you think about it, now Marketing has become what's called inbound marketing. And we use that term thanks to HubSpot. I'm a big believer in HubSpot and what they kind of push. And I actually teach blogging at a university. And so one of the things that I make my students do is go through the inbound marketing certification program for HubSpot.
Yeah, that's cool.
If you haven't checked it out, go to HubSpot's website and then go to certifications. And you'll be able to check that out there. I actually have my team here at Moore & Giles doing it as well.
That's cool.
So anyway, long story short, inbound marketing is now, how can I be helpful? How can I delight a customer? You know, the truth is that the majority of people getting online are not just getting online to go out online. They're going online to answer a specific question for them. I mean, a few of us have sites that we go to every day. We keep in our feeds. We bookmark. But the truth is... ESPN or, you know, for me, I love F-stoppers if we're talking photography.
Yeah.
You know, I have a very few of those in my life. And so I think what I'm really utilizing my search engine for is to answer a question. I need something. I'm looking for something. Help me. So let's think about photography. How does that play in? Well, you know, insert my city name, comma, photography. You know, I'm searching for the best photographer in Lynchburg, Virginia, you know, where we're based here. And so who comes up? Well, you know, a lot of people go, well, it's all about SEO. Well, it is about SEO, but the bigger thing that you need to be concerned with is what content are you creating, you know, in order to answer those questions that people are asking, right? And if you're creating two kinds of content, number one, if it's relevant, you know, and number two, if it's shared, right? So if other people are seeing it as relevant, essentially, you know, and there's a lot of traffic to that, then all of a sudden the search engines go, well, that makes sense. I'll point people in that direction, you know? So I think when you really start to think about marketing and how that's changed, you know, and I think, you know, you have to factor in the tools of social media, you know, those are just tools. They're going to change. They change, it seems like, every day, you know? It's really understanding how to use those tools. But it all comes back to how are you being helpful in your marketing?
And it's I mean, when you're talking about running a business, in my opinion, it's cheaper today to market
than it's ever been.
Than it was 5 years ago, where I'm buying print ads and I'm buying, you know, this ad and that ad and putting that here and here.
Yeah.
I would much rather, like you talked about before, a focused, targeted search on my client.
Absolutely.
And create content around that. And be active on those mediums we were talking about, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and all of the other important ones.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, too, in marketing is that we rise and fall based on our definitions of success. We've often heard that, and I think it really applies to marketing. Because what you have to realize is that not every medium is supposed to do the same thing,
right?
So look at your social media channels, for example. When you look at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, what is your goal for each of those tools, right?
Yeah.
What would you consider, quote unquote, a conversion,
right?
You know, and where are you affecting the person in their buyer's journey, right? Is it just awareness? Is it consideration? You know, are you trying to move them to conversion? And I think oftentimes we want to see a conversion out of every piece of social media. Well, that's not true for the buyer journey,
right?
And so I think if you think about just your own personal life, about how you begin to understand brands and bump into brands, and then as you progress to potentially buy a brand and become brand loyal, think about yourself in the same way when you're doing your marketing.
That's a great point.
You know,
what resonates and why does it resonate?
Yeah, why does it work for you? But then also, like, at what point did you move to the consideration phase of
purchasing?
Yeah, purchasing, signing a contract. You know,
things for me is it's all about the story that's being told. Again, I've talked about Apple already in this interview. But anytime there's an Apple commercial, I'm just like, oh, it's amazing. The one that always keeps coming back is, did you see the one? I think it came out in during Christmas time, but it was the younger girl doing the song of the grandmother who recorded a record a long time. Anyway, she was doing it on her Mac and GarageBand and iPad. They were integrating basically all of the Mac apps into one. Anyway, it was really, really, I literally wanted to go out and buy everybody I knew an iPad. You know? but for me, it's a story. And when we go back to the SSP brand, I'm not pitching myself as a wedding photographer to the bride and groom, I'm telling them, hey, we're going to connect on a personal level. You're going to love us.
Yeah.
And we're going to help you tell this story to your kids and to your grandkids and to their grandkids. Yeah. And some people might hear that and roll their eyes and think it's cliche, but that resonates to me.
Yeah.
And that's the story I want to tell to them.
Yeah.
And I want it to be, it bothers me more than anything when, this sounds terrible, but if somebody calls me and says, I don't like this photo, I'm usually like, well, I don't care. I like it. Whatever. It's an objective or subjective experience.
Yep.
What really bothers me is when they call me back and they'll say things like, well, I've only had one experience like this, but hey, I had a bad experience with this photographer. That bothers me.
Yeah.
Because what I told this bride was, well, now I feel like your photos are going to, your entire experience is tainted. The photos are going to be tainted.
Absolutely.
So if the experience, the story, all of that is tainted, the product is tainted.
That goes back to the example of the guy that's bringing soda into the convenience right. store.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that's just a great point about making sure that you're thoughtful in everything that you do. And the people that you're bringing on board as your secondary shooters, your video team, that kind of stuff, that they buy into that as well. You get them around that. So back to you make a great point about telling stories. I think that's where we are finding the most benefit, even here at Moore & Giles. So we are, majority of our business is B2B. We are business to business. We're leather to the trade. So we sell leather to high-end designers in residential hospitality situations. If you've been in Restoration Hardware, Crate and Barrel, Pottery Barn, that's all of our leather. If you've been
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Millions of square feet of that.
That's amazing.
We sell about 100,000 square feet a day. On the other side of the business, we have this very small bag line, and it's business to consumer. It's our B2C brand. And really, it came from a selfish desire of, we were traveling the world, going to all of these tanneries and selling our leather, and we didn't want black ballistic nylon with roller wheels.
You know?
Yeah. We wanted something different. And so we worked to create these beautiful weekend and travel bags that really are representative of who we are. And so I always tell people that we're not a men's fashion brand. We're a leather company.
Yeah.
We just happen to make beautiful bags and accessories that go with
them.
Yeah,
you do.
Jeez. You know? So let's talk about story real quick. So when I tell the Moore & Giles story, I tell it very quickly like this. We were founded in 1933 in the heart of the Great Depression right here in Lynchburg, Virginia. And our founder was actually selling leather to footwear manufacturing. And that was done here in the United States, believe it or not, at one time.
Not in China.
Yeah, exactly. And it was the very same factory in which he'd been laid off from during the Great Depression. And so our company evolved from selling footwear leather to starting to sell leather to furniture manufacturers down in High Point. Those guys that make furniture, they are true craftsmen. And so we were selling them leather, and the furniture was beautiful, but the problem was is that we were trading on price.
I want you to explain that a little bit further.
Well, you're going to trade on three things in life, right? You're going to trade on time, quality, and price.
Right.
And you can only really trade on two of the three. You can never trade on all three.
Right.
So if you're trading on price, just like we were in the 90s, there's always going to be somebody that can do it cheaper. There's always going to be somebody willing to do it cheaper.
Which is honestly the complaint that you hear a lot with photographers is, well, how am I supposed to succeed when the weekend warrior is buying a camera and doing it for half the price?
Yeah.
Well,
trade in quality.
Right. If you think about it that way, you always lose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is that really the client that you want at the end of the day?
No.
I think what we find most often in our lives is that the people that are most concerned about beating us up on price are going to be the biggest pain in the ass.
Right. Yeah. That that's the truth. And you and I just had a conversation about a client that I had.
Yeah.
Very real conversation. And I just referenced this earlier about a really bad experience that I had with a bride.
Yeah.
And it started off by me trading on price.
Yeah.
And it ended very poorly.
Well, and I would hope that at this point, you know, in your career, you've kind of learned that lesson.
Absolutely.
I don't need that.
I don't need that headache.
I've got enough weddings. Yeah. I don't need to fight for that little bit more.
Right.
So back to trading on price, there's always going to be somebody that's going to do it cheaper. So you've got to trade on quality, right? And then the other thing you've got to trade on is time, right? So can I provide you the service or the product that you want quickly? But what we really did was, as a company, getting back to marketing and branding, was we positioned ourselves not as a leather supplier, right, but we positioned ourselves as this fashion-forward group of individuals that think about leather as fashion,
right,
you know, even if it is on a couch or a chair. And it's completely changed the world. Today, we have about 100 employees. And, you know, that's like Sam Straw Photography, that's a very quick rise over the last 20 years, excuse me.
That's crazy.
So, but back to telling story, you know, I just told you a story. Yeah. And I think people connect to stories.
Sure.
So think about the stories that you're sharing. Share, of course, your own story. But also share other people's stories.
Yeah.
Share great stories. Share great stories of bride and grooms. Share great stories of other photographers. Share stories of people in the industry like you and I are doing now.
Right.
Because those are interesting.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's cheap.
Yeah.
Let them tell your story.
Yeah. It's great. And I think the other thing you think about it is, like, back to branding, like, how do those people whose story I'm sharing, you know, how are they representative of the brand in a positive way, you know, and how do they influence other people? What we're finding at Moore & Giles is when we share stories of just cool guys that are real world guys that have been successful, but they travel a lot, and so they use our products to travel. When we share those stories, we actually get a much better response, not only in the open rate and the click-through rate of those emails, but also actually in the conversion rate. People are actually buying things through those emails that aren't actually selling anything,
right,
you know? And yeah. So I think, again, it goes back to the point of that soft sell, that storytelling aspect, and kind of just letting the person that's going through this buyer's journey to kind of decide at what point they convert,
yeah,
but always just sharing a cool story with them along the way.
I'll get emails or Facebook messages from photographers who's starting brand new business. They're looking at things like, I don't even know where to begin, you know. So let's forget equipment. Let's forget about that. Yeah. They're trying to navigate social media as a whole. Mm. We've talked about branding. That's important.
Yeah.
Aesthetic feel,
yeah,
what you represent. Marketing, yeah, that's important.
Yeah.
All of the social mediums is important,
yeah,
when it comes to marketing. How would you, or what would you direct a photographer to go to? Like, I usually tell them, like, hey, just stick to three.
Yeah.
You know, find the three that,
yeah,
are good for you and do that. Like, yeah, for me, it's Facebook. Twitter's okay, Pinterest is great,
mm-hmm,
and Instagram is good.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think when you look at all four of those mediums that you just described, right, again, defining what is success for each of those by defining who it is that's actually utilizing those the most. We know that the fastest growing segment of Facebook users is adult women, 35 to 55 years old, right?
Right.
Who is that? That's a potential bride, but more than likely, it's probably a mom.
Yeah.
Right?
Who pays the bill.
Who pays the bill, right?
Right?
Heavy influencer.
Yeah.
Right? The secondary demo is the 24 to 35-year-old woman, right? So again, that's your bride.
Yeah.
So Facebook should be heavy push for you. The challenge with Facebook is that you guys have worked so hard to create this reach of, you know, tens of thousands of followers. And then, unfortunately, when you go to share a story or a post, it's only reaching a handful of people.
Yeah,
that is, unless you pay to play, unless
right,
you boost that post. And that may be the approach that you have to take on some of that.
Well, know? And I tell people all the time, like, relevant content's important. Frequency of posts is important. Paying attention when you post is important.
But yep,
the reality is sometimes you just have to pay.
Yeah, sometimes you do have to pay to post it. I think when you look at Instagram, still 60% of the user base of Instagram is female.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great place to be posting beautiful images. I believe for a photographer too, like, the majority of your images should be edited images that you're posting to Instagram. People
yeah,
have different opinions on whether it should be iPhone or I think you should put your best foot forward at all
I
times.
I totally agree with that.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, again, if you've got 60% of that user base being a young female group, you've got potential brides or bridesmaids that are sharing things. And then when you look at Twitter, though, it's interesting is that Twitter is a big brand product, you know, and it's also heavily used by men. So if you're sharing content on Twitter, you know, what are you sharing exactly?
Yeah.
If an image is worth 1,000 words, well, you can only get 140 characters into Twitter. So what are you doing?
Right.
Should you even be using Twitter, to be
yeah,
honest with you? But maybe it should be an approach for grooms. Maybe it should be an approach to talk to other photographers or maybe even venues.
Yeah.
You know,
that's usually my Twitter approach is vendor to vendor, peer to peer. It's very rare that I'm targeting a reach toward a bride on Twitter.
Yeah. We do the exact same thing here at Moore Giles.
Yeah.
So we're talking to other designers or other businesses. The majority of the time when using Twitter. And then Pinterest is just such a valuable tool. I mean, I know it's hard to sit down and really focus on like, okay, I'm going to build some boards, but build some boards, make sure all those images are connected to your website that you're, you know, creating those boards with so that you're linking back to those. But I'm telling you, man, that's the first place that people that are potentially starting wedding planning or, you know, dreaming.
Right. And what's interesting is the majority of wedding photographers are female.
And interesting. I didn't know that.
You know, that to me is the first place I'm like, hey, you're a female. You should be crushing it on Pinterest. Yeah. Like, this should be a no-brainer for you. And the majority of users are female. And that's the connection I'm drawing there, not just because they're women. I'm not trying to be a sexist there, but
I mean,
it's difficult for me. It's difficult for me to get on Pinterest and do anything.
Well, men have not adopted it. You know, in the past, it's been recipes, it's been wardrobes, you know.
Two things I care deeply about.
Yeah, I can tell. I can tell. Let me describe what Sam is wearing. he doesn't have on pants.
No.
And it is a button-down flannel shirt that I've probably seen about 50 times in my life.
Yeah. I actually am not wearing a shirt, and I just have a bow tie on.
It's actually a Texas bolo with no pants. But no, I think men have adopted Pinterest as of recent because some of the boards and brands that have started curating things on there have been really cool. I've got a couple boards from Warren Giles that are just like, classically cool stuff, man, like cool cars, cool trucks, things that work well with leather,
right?
You know, and the truth is that we create so much content here that has relationship with those things that I hope somebody else finds our stuff and pins it. I think that's the biggest reason to use Pinterest, right? Yeah. Is that you're putting stuff out there that you know is beautiful and you're like, man, I hope somebody else pins this because I believe that it's good work.
Yeah, you're letting the rest do the work for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you can continue the conversation down the road with Periscope, with Avon, with, help me here, Meerkat, you know, with any of the newer mediums that are coming on, especially in video. But when you start to look at the age demographics of those, they're so young that it's hard to believe that there's value there yet for weddings.
Yeah.
You know,
we've talked about Snapchat a little bit. Yeah. Snapchat is okay.
It's okay, but again, it's trending so young. You're looking at 14 to 24 year olds. Vast majority of them are women.
Yeah.
The one thing that is interesting about Snapchat, and my students at university recently brought this up to me. They said, I look at my Snapchat as more valuable than my Instagram. And the reason is because of the fact that it only stays alive for so long. Now, the fact that you can tell a 24-hour story now has helped that. But they believe that they like to get into almost a quiet space when they go to look at Snapchat. I'd say it's probably because they're looking at dirty photos of a kid next door. But they say it's because they see it as valuable because it's going to disappear.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's an interesting way to look at it. So.
That is interesting. So, all right, just to wrap it up.
Yeah.
If you could, photographer comes to you or somebody starting a new business.
Yeah.
Hey, I need help. If there's something you could give them tangibly or tangibly, whatever, as a conversation piece, what's that one thing that you feel like, look, if you could pull anything from this and you're trying to grow your business, you're trying to grow your brand, do this.
Well, I mean, I think you have to start with the basic blocking and tackling, right? Like you do have to do your standard logo. You know, you have to get their website up. You have to do your social mediums. You have to do all of those things that are pretty standard and straightforward, you know, run of the mill in today's world. You have to have these things to be a successful wedding photographer, at least at a base. But I think the things that kind of get overlooked are back to our branding conversation are, what am I doing every day? What are people experiencing with me every day that really is a representation of who insert name photography group is, right? And I think that is the thing that I would leave people with is what are people's reactions to you as a person and people's reactions to you as a brand, you know, what is their takeaway or what do you want them to take away? That might be the best question to ask yourself when you start this process is what do you want people to know about your photography business when they bump into you or they bump into your brand online?
Yeah.
And I think
so what you want is important because if my logo was who I was, it would be a train wreck.
Yeah, or what it was going to be.
Right.
You know, I think that would be the very, very first place to start is ask yourself that question. From there, do the basic blocking and tackling of website, social media. And then here's an interesting thing. You know, when you start to think about trade shows and advertisements and all that kind of stuff, you know, it really sometimes comes down to where are you going to pay to be in the presence of people doing extraordinary things. So is that at a trade show next to another wedding vendor? Is that in a publication? If the answer is no, then don't do it.
Yeah.
Look for places to be next to people doing extraordinary things. And I think what happens from that is that it's a Chinese proverb of high tide will rise all boats. So don't be afraid of working with another photographer. Don't be afraid of working with somebody who, you know, is playing in your space as well. You both.
That's fantastic, man.
Thanks.
Thanks, dude.
Huh.
That was good.
I'll leave you with this. When I met Sam about 7 years ago,
oh boy,
we were talking about logo and we were talking about branding and we were sitting in the White Hart. I'll never forget this. And I said, there is only 52 weeks in the year, right? So there's essentially 52 to 104 times if you could at the most take a photo, you know, of people and get paid to do it. And I said, you have to figure out ways to multiply yourself, right? And you've done that successfully. You've added not only myself, but my wife and a handful of other fantastic and amazing photographers.
Kids are next.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have the whole family working for you. You know, and so as we talk about branding, right? And you talk about surrounding that brand with people that are representative of it, like look for ways to multiply yourself. You know, I think you do that well on social media. You know, I think you do that well utilizing tools and apps, you know, to try to make the most of your time. Because at the end of the day, you can only be one person in so many places at one time. And so if you can find ways to multiply yourself, it's at that point, then all of a sudden you can really grow your brand. And I think that's been very true for San Trail Photo.
Yeah, it was life-changing, man. I don't know how many vendors I've come up or worked with that has said to me, dude, you are everywhere.
Yeah.
And I don't pay that much for advertising. Yeah. Thanks, man.
Yeah. It's perception, isn't
perception
it?
Is everything.
It is reality.
Wow, episode one is over. That went quick. That went real fast. A lot of information in there. Thank you, Daryl Kalfi, for doing that. He's a really brilliant guy, one of my closest friends. I'm not really sure where our business would be without him. God only knows with my ADHD where we would be. Thanks to Smart Albums for their sponsorship of this episode. It's a really brilliant software. I'm not just saying that. I use it all of the time to design albums. It's quick, it's fast, it's easy, it's intuitive. I love it. Our brides love it, and really that's all that matters. It's beautiful. They're gonna be giving away a free copy of their software. So probably next episode, maybe episode 3, so continue to listen. Don't forget to check us out on Twitter, at Sam Stroud Photo, on Instagram, at Sam Stroud, Facebook, at Sam Stroud Photo, all of the obligatory social media plugs. Head over to www.samstroudphoto.com and use the promo code SSPPODCAST for 10% off on all of our presets and Made Easy guides. All right, guys, that's it. See you next week.